Wireless connection to the internet is a big selling point these days for computers and for mobile phones. Schools, trains, offices and even entire city districts are installing the radio transmitters that are needed to make these connections work. At the same time, though, increasing numbers of people are claiming that these radio masts and wireless connectors, called Wi-Fi transmitters in the trade, are making them ill. They believe they're hypersensitive to the radio waves that are totally harmless to the vast majority of people. Michael Bevington is a case in point. He's a classics teacher at Stowe Independent School in Oxfordshire, and he told me what happened to him.
Well, it was on the Friday 29th of September. They put the transmitters into my classroom, and I thought, that's great, I'll be able to make good use of this. But over the course of the week, it built up so that each time I was in the classroom with these wireless transmitters beside or near me, there were tremendous pains and nausea and pains in the joints and burning sensations on the skin and things like that.
Why did you put it down to the wireless networks?
I don't think there was anything else that I could put it down to. I mean, it was just simply that when I was there in the presence of these wireless transmitters, I got these symptoms, and when I left afterwards, or went indeed to other parts of the school, that I didn't. So it was very clear-cut to me exactly what caused it.
What happened next?
Well, in the course of the following week, I became convinced it was genuine. It wasn't in the mind, it wasn't psychological. The following Monday, I saw the headmaster and said that I wouldn't be able to continue teaching unless the transmitters were removed. And he was very sympathetic and arranged for them to be removed.
Has it had any lasting effect on you now that they've been removed from your workplace?
Yes, this is the great concern, that it has triggered what I believe is called electrosensitivity. I am now sensitive to all sorts of electromagnetic radiation wherever I go.
And have you sought medical advice?
Oh yes, I went to see the three different doctors in the practice in the first few weeks, and none of them were able to give any help. They didn't seem to be particularly aware of this situation, and they have now referred me to a consultant neurologist, but that's going to be a while. It was a 3-month waiting list, I think.
I want to ask you something, but you can tell me to mind my own business if you like. But a lot of people who hear stories like this do believe that the cause of these pains is psychological. Have you any history of psychological problems or mental illness or anything like that?
No, I mean, that's not my style at all. And it's just, if you don't mind me saying so, that's just rubbish, because on Sunday we had a Chris Dingle service, and halfway through the service I had a distinct headache and I couldn't work out what it was. And then I realised, as the brownies were handing out the Chris Dingles, turned round to go back again, one of them had hearing aids in both ears. And I'm fairly sure that was the reason why I had the headache and actually walked further away, so it reduced in its intensity.
Michael Bevington, so what is the evidence that Wi-Fi really is at the root of his health problems? The vast majority of scientists say there is none. There are, though, individual scientists who disagree, and Karen Hoggan has met one of them and reports now on the debate.
Yes, I met up with Dr. George Carlo, the boss of the American group, the Safe Wireless Initiative, who was in London last week. He's a medical scientist, epidemiologist, lawyer and author, and he was invited here to address an audience made up mostly of people worried about the health effects of mobiles, phone masts, Wi-Fi, etc. The Safe Wireless Initiative was set up in 2002, and it's building up a registry of consumers with symptoms which they believe have been caused by electromagnetic radiation from mobiles, base stations, wireless computers and the like.
What we have done in the Safe Wireless Initiative is to use this information to identify ways that we can intervene so that people do not have to suffer from the effects of information-carrying radio waves. We have tens of thousands of reports now in our registry from people who believe that they have been harmed by electromagnetic radiation in all the different windows. And because our focus is on clinical information so that we can help patients, it was necessary for us to be available for consults for primary care doctors in the United States who were seeing patients with symptoms that they didn't understand. And the scenario was sort of sad, because doctors were calling in and saying, look, you know, I've had this fellow as a patient for 10 years, and I think he's lost his mind. And after understanding the mechanistic basis for electrohypersensitivity, then the doctor is able to now understand interventions, therapeutic interventions.
Dr. George Carlo. Well, before the presentation kicked off, I talked to Professor Laurie Challis, the chairman of the UK's programme on mobile telecommunications research and health, which is funded by the industry and government, although it's actually independent of both. Now, Professor Challis did stress that Wi-Fi is not strictly his remit, but he says he's interested because it's similar to mobile phones.
Wi-Fi operates very much like a mobile phone system. There's a thing called a router, which is what actually transmits the information that plays the role of the base station, a very low powered base station. And then there's the client computer, which, in other words, your computer with an antenna stuck inside it, and that plays the role of a mobile phone. And they talk to each other, so you don't have wires in between. Now, they both give out almost the same amount of power as a mobile phone. So both the router, which is the base station, gives out the same amount of power as an average mobile phone. And measurements that have been made in Switzerland show that if you hold the router 2 centimeters from your head, or you hold your computer 2 centimeters from your head, you get just about the same exposure as you get from a mobile phone. The frequency is somewhat higher than a mobile phone, but not so much higher that you would think there'd be very much difference in any potential health effects.
But his point is that we don't go around holding a computer, for example, very close to our head. So in fact, in terms of proximity and the amount of time we use Wi-Fi, the exposure is much less than mobile phones. Professor Challis says he'd be surprised if the actual total exposure a child receives in a day is anything like 1 minute using a mobile phone. However, he does say he doesn't want to see young children using mobile phones or putting laptops on their laps. Specifically on Wi-Fi, though, I asked him what his reaction is to some schools in this country removing Wi-Fi.
It's the job of the Health Protection Agency and the government to give advice. I'm speaking as an individual. It's not a research question you're asking. I speak as an individual. My feeling is that the risks are very small compared to using a mobile phone. So I wouldn't mind if my grandchild went to school and used Wi-Fi. And they use it at home. So it doesn't bother me. It would bother me if my grandchildren of primary age use a mobile phone.
So where do you stand on the issue of more research into the safety of Wi-Fi?
Well, insofar as the exposure from Wi-Fi is much less than that of mobile phones, and insofar as they're not very different from mobile phones, at the moment I feel we'd better to concentrate heavily on what more needs to be done on mobile phones, where the exposure is so much greater.
So that's where Professor Laurie Challis, the chairman of the UK's programme on mobile telecommunications research and health, is coming from. Now, would Dr. George Carlo, who believes that Wi-Fi can damage health, be swayed by this argument? Well, he gave a complex and detailed 30-minute presentation, so I'll sum up the thrust of the argument. What Dr. Carlo did was spell out his belief that radiation from mobile phones and Wi-Fi can cause damage to body cells, which, he says, could lead to electrosensitivity or cancer. And the climax of his presentation was pretty unequivocal.
Our recommendation, and the recommendation that we are now pushing to have implemented in communities around the United States, is this: is that we have to have an alternative infrastructure to wireless. The alternative that we recommend is fiber optic. And our feeling is that over a period of 5 years, if a gradual move is made toward fiber optic infrastructure in place of wireless infrastructure, that the background level of information carrying radio waves can be reduced by 90%.
It's difficult to overstate the strength of feeling at this meeting. There must have been about 100 people there, all of whom were angry and upset. They're ill and they blame electromagnetic radiation. The focus of the meeting was electromagnetic radiation in general from all sources, and since we're focusing for this item on Wi-Fi in particular, at the end of the presentation I spoke to both scientists and started by asking Professor Laurie Challis, who disputes a link between Wi-Fi and ill health, for his reaction to Dr. Carlo's claims.
Of course, it's very interesting to hear what he found, but until it's been through peer review, until I've read it, and compared it with what other people have found, it's very difficult for me to make any comment on it. So that's the dilemma. And I think he understands that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Very much in agreement. I think that the big difference is that
as Dr. Chalice points out, we have different philosophical bents, not different philosophies about science, but we have two different jobs. Research is one job. Clinical intervention is another job. In the Safe Wireless Initiative, we're trying to do clinical intervention with imperfect scientific data so that when we move over into the scientific side, and I welcome the opportunity to send you data and to get feedback on our papers and what we're doing. In the scientific side, that is the perfect form for that, and we will do that. On the clinical intervention side, because we run this registry, we're providing maybe an outlet for many people who have the kinds of frustrations that you saw here. These are people who have real symptoms, and it's important just from a patient interaction point of view that they have an outlet. So that by bringing in some type of registry or some type of place where there is an outlet, I think that an awful lot of the tension might be released. And I think that would be constructive. I think that's what we're doing with our Safe Wireless Initiative Registry. I think we're helping people by providing them a place to tell their story. And also, we're providing their doctors with some basis for differential diagnosis. And that's a huge help.
Well, we're focusing just on Wi-Fi here. And the fact is, you don't have any evidence, do you? You're frightening people with no actual scientific evidence that they have a reason to be worried.
No, that's not true. This is based on real science. It isn't epidemiological data. Now, the problem with waiting around for epidemiological data is that by the time you have all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, you're counting a lot of bodies. And when we have people who are sick, and we're basing our work on clinical input, can't wait for that.
Dr. Carly, you're not persuading the scientists, are you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that on a scientific level, there are a dozen papers that I think Dr. Chalice needs to read that are already out in the literature. From my perspective, this discussion about the science is very appropriate, but it should not be a discussion that precludes people who are ill from receiving intervention. So that's the philosophical difference, and I think that as regards the Wi-Fi in schools, it just is a crazy experiment. I don't know why anybody would want to do that.
So what you're saying is that there are no peer-reviewed papers out there, scientific papers proving that Wi-Fi, just focus on Wi-Fi for the moment, is actually dangerous.
Well, but if you're parsing, looking for studies of Wi-Fi per se, then the answer is yes. There are no peer-reviewed papers. If you're looking at peer-reviewed papers that address the information-carrying radio wave mechanism, yes, there are. And now that is where you have the need for intervention. You know, our whole point here is not to argue about cause and effect. We're just assuming that, okay, we assume that there's a causal relationship. Dr. Chalice assumes that there isn't. We're saying intervene if you have the technology to intervene. That's a precautionary principle. I don't understand a precautionary principle that doesn't try to afford some benefit to people who are at risk.
But the fact is, you have no proof, do you, that Wi-Fi is dangerous?
No, I'm not going to let you get away with that. We have tremendous proof that information-carrying radio waves coming from Wi-Fi and other sources are dangerous. And that's where we'll stop.
What proof, though, do you have?
We have scientific proof, clinical proof. That's what we do for a living.
Are you buying that?
No. I don't think at the moment there is any clear evidence. I think there are hints, and I think the reasons why we might, if there is some damage, we might not have seen it yet, which is why we need to continue more research. I don't know any evidence that shows, for example, that information-carrying radio waves are more dangerous than ordinary radio waves. I haven't seen any. I can't even think of a mechanism, although we are trying to do experiments to see if there could conceivably be something out there. But I know of no evidence. So again, I'm waiting to hear what that evidence may be.
Dr. Carlo, are you scaremongering?
No. Oh, jeez. You know, from a research point of view, what Dr. Chalice is saying is correct. But as I said in there, research does not save lives. Our job is to save lives. And we have information from clinical input. We have a registry that we've been running for years. We have scientific mechanistic data that tells us where to intervene, tells us the mechanism of harm, and that's what we are recommending. This is not scaremongering. This is public health, and it's very different from research.
And that's the problem, Winifred. People are suffering, they're ill, and they're convinced it's because of electromagnetic radiation. But the trouble is, so far, there's no peer-reviewed scientific research evidence to prove that link. And whatever evidence there is isn't accepted by most scientists as being reliable, conclusive proof. And the UK government just isn't going to make any expensive policy changes, for example, switching to fibre optic cables, on that basis.
Karen Hogan, thank you.